It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We may witness something remarkable today as Senator McCain, no stranger to acts of heroism and courage, returning to Washington for this crucial vote on the motion to proceed, and whose vote could make the difference to break a stalemate on the Republicans' 7-year promise to finally repeal and replace Obamacare, as President Trump had a very clear message for what's at stake today.
Any senator who votes against starting debate is telling America that you are fine with the Obamacare nightmare, which is what it is.
The vote is just hours away, and passage would be a much-needed victory for the president and the GOP, but not so fast. Exactly which version of the bill they'll be proceeding to is unknown, and that's causing some senators to question opening debate in the first place. Conservative Senator Rand Paul says he only wants to proceed on a clean repeal, while moderate Senator Susan Collins says she wants to know which version she's being asked to vote on first.
At this point, I don't know whether we're going to be voting to proceed to the House bill or to any of the various versions of the Senate bill, to a brand new Senate bill.
It's all about the math. Republicans can only lose 2 votes with McCain's return. No Democrat is supporting it. And if it passes, it opens the floor to any amendment any senator wants to offer to fix health care. And that will be a spectacular.
All right. Well, that was Griff Jenkins, at least most of Griff Jenkins' report this morning on Fox and Friends First. He's talking about what's going to be happening today in regard to health care. But, gee, that's not all that's happening. By the way, Sandy Rios in the morning with you. Let me talk about health care first, because it is so very important. If it were the only thing happening this 6 months, it would be important. And, yes, we find ourselves in a vortex of stories that just keeps our heads spinning. It's really hard, you know. This is an information age and kind of a dangerous time, don't you think? It's overwhelming, and so important things just don't get what they should in terms of consideration. But I digress. All right, health care. All right, the top of the report from Griff, you heard that Senator McCain is coming back for this vote. And, you know, last week I said, even after he received his diagnosis, that I was extremely concerned because the Senate votes, the Republican votes that are needed to pass anything, right now, the margin is so slim, and we have such terrible Republican senators like Susan Collins, we just heard, who might as well be a Democrat. And so McConnell needs 52 Republican votes under reconciliation to pass health care. But here's the deal. It won't surprise you that Senator McConnell has decided, you know, not to change the rules of the Senate, because, of course, the rules of the Senate are more important than the future of the country. So today, the vote they're taking this morning is a vote to vote. That cloture thing? They have to vote to vote. So that means they need more than, they need 60 votes to proceed to a motion on anything on health care. Do you think for a minute, anybody think for a minute that any Democrats are going to vote with them? I personally don't. I just can't imagine that they'll get 60 votes to proceed to the next step, which, as Griff said, is uncertain. Will it be repeal? Well, I kind of think it won't be repeal. By the way, I wanted to say something. Senator McCain is coming back for this vote. And after I've got sidetracked, but I said last week that I thought he should be urged to resign because it's just too crucial a time. We cannot afford to miss, to lose his vote or that place in the Senate. And so I thought it would be, in spite of his illness, it's not a time to cling to something. But evidently he's well enough to come back, and God bless him, because he understands that his vote is needed. And so he is making that. I'm sure it's not going to be easy, so I have to, hats off to him. I don't have no idea how he'll vote. Certainly, surely, he'll vote, you know, to proceed to a vote. I think Senator McCain will do that, and they're going to need every vote they can to make up that 60 in order to get to some kind of a vote. So Donald Trump, I think, is doing everything he can. He met yesterday in the White House with victims of Obamacare. In fact, Kevin Cork says something about that in this Nest report. Let's listen.
Now it is up to us to get great health care for the American people. We must repeal and replace Obamacare now.
In an effort to steer the public conversation away from the Russia investigation and back toward health care, President Trump today met with a group of Americans who believe they have been hurt by the Affordable Care Act.
Behind me today, we have real American families, great families, just spent a lot of time with them, who are suffering because 7 years ago, a small group of politicians and special interests in Washington engineered a government takeover of health care. Every pledge that Washington Democrats made to pass that bill turned out to be a lie. It was a big, fat, ugly lie.
Today's meeting came just hours after Mr. Trump warned Republican lawmakers that there would be repercussions if they failed to act on health care reform. Republicans have a last chance to do the right thing on repeal and replace after years of talking and campaigning on it. That tweet won in a series about health care over the past week, each meant to ratchet up the pressure on Senate Republicans to repeal and replace Obamacare.
To every member of the Senate, I say this. The American people have waited long enough. There's been enough talk and no action. Now is the time for action. Any senator who votes against starting debate is telling America that you are fine with the Obamacare nightmare, which is what it is.
You know, I'm really cynical this morning, but I actually think I was just reading Senator McConnell's statement, which I will just tell you. He basically says, I promised the people of Kentucky I would vote to move beyond the failures of Obamacare. He doesn't say repeal it, root and branch. He doesn't repeat his own words because, you know, he can't. I just think he's going to hide behind cloture again. And if by some miracle he should get 60 votes, then I'm reading from Senate Conservatives Fund that they are busy making backroom deals. In case they get those 60 votes, they have a plan for all of us for health care, and it includes promising lots of money to various senators in order to get their vote on a bad health care bill. And the Senate Conservatives Fund actually spells those things out. It's $1.32 billion for the state of Alaska, lots of money for Louisiana and Bill Cassidy, Indian Health Services enrollees in South Dakota to help Mike Rounds. One senior GOPA actually said, we're making it rain on them. That means, you know, rain with your money so that they can pass a bill. So we don't believe that Senator McConnell, if he should get his 60 votes, will move to vote on full repeal. Just don't think so. So if you want to do something this morning, if you haven't done this already, and even if you have, you might want to call your senators this morning and encourage them to just make it simple. Just say, we want a full repeal of Obamacare. We want you to repeal Obamacare. And so so that's the state of that. But I have to move on because Senator Sessions, of course, is front and center. And this is, boy, these are difficult times. And these are complex issues. Complex. In fact, Kevin Cork does a report on this. Let's listen.
While health care reform has consumed much of the president's social media of late, increasingly he's turning his attention toward Attorney General Jeff Sessions, whom the president has previously criticized for recusing himself from the Russia investigation. So why aren't the committees and investigators, and of course our beleaguered AG, looking into crooked Hillary's crimes and Russia relations? This, as new White House Communications Chief Anthony Scaramucci is warning that the leaks that have beset the Trump administration from the very beginning will end on his watch, or else.
They're going to get fired. I'm just going to make it very, very clear. If you're going to keep leaking, I'm going to fire everybody. It's just very binary.
Well, it's kind of ironic that he should say that, because the AP this morning, I hold this story in my hand. President Donald Trump has spoken with advisors about firing Attorney General Jeff Sessions as he continues to rage against Sessions' decision to recuse himself from all matters related to Russia. And so then it's quotes, according to three people who have recently spoken to the president, they demanded anonymity to discuss private conversations. And it goes down and it reveals other things. And it says, according to four White House and outside advisors who, like others interviewed, spoke on condition of anonymity. So here we go, getting the inside scoop from hostile media about what's going on inside the White House. And they are, you heard the tweet, Kevin read it. This was the president's second tweet. So why aren't committees and investigators and, of course, our beleaguered AG looking and to crooked Hillary's crimes and Russia relationships. I want to read you a statement. Meanwhile, Senator Sessions is working night and day to reestablish order in our immigration system, to shore up the confidence of policemen, to fight back on sanctuary cities. You know, he's been working night and day. There's no question about it. In fact, let me read this to you. On Friday, Sessions traveled to Philadelphia to meet with law enforcement officials. In his speech, he vowed to crack down on illegal immigration and on sanctuary cities that are not communicating with federal authorities about undocumented immigrants. He spoke of how hard he is working despite having none of his U.S. attorneys in place and most of his senior officials still not confirmed by the Senate. Now, I have tried to explain this before, but I think that spells it out. You've got Senator Sessions, the Attorney General, working in the Justice Department pretty much single-handedly, with maybe a few people helping him. So everything he does, the bulk of the hundreds of employees in that department have been appointed by Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch, and they hate him, and they will not do what he wants them to do. He does not have staff to do the things, I think, that he's being asked to do. Of course he would want to do what the president is asking, but he can't do it by himself. And that goes back to the Senate. That goes back to Mitch McConnell and the rules. Oh, the rule, they got to abide by the rules. They've got to be gentlemen to the Democrats. And the Democrats, of course, are stopping these nominees. How could it be that he doesn't have any special, he does not have a U.S. attorney in any of the states? He doesn't have any. How can that be? How can he do his job? How can he do? There's a lot of other things going on besides Russia. How can he perform his duties if he doesn't have staff? And so that's what I think is very crucial right now. Jared Kushner testified yesterday. Let's listen to that. Cut five.
Let me be very clear. I did not collude with Russia, nor do I know of anyone else in the campaign who did so.
Fresh off the heels of his Capitol Hill appearance, Jared Kushner was adamant his four meetings with Russian officials last year were inconsequential.
I had no improper contacts. I have not relied on Russian funds for my businesses.
In this 11-page statement for the record, Kushner provided new details about a meeting with then-Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak and other diplomats on the sidelines of this April 2016 campaign event at Washington, D.C.'s Mayflower Hotel. Quote, each exchange lasted less than a minute. Some gave me their business cards and invited me to lunch at their embassies. I never took them up on any of these invitations, and that was the extent of the interactions. After the election, Kushner claimed he had forgotten Kislyak's name. In December, he agreed to meet with the Russian ambassador, along with incoming National Security Advisor Mike Flynn. The group wanted to do a call with Russian military commanders on the ground in Syria because of the ongoing crisis. But Kushner said the call was abandoned because of logistics, and he denied media reports he suggested a secret communications back channel. On the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting with Donald Trump Jr. and then campaign chairman Paul Manafort, a Russian lawyer, and others connected to Moscow, Kushner said he came late and the conversation was about adoption, not allegations involving Hillary Clinton. Quote, the meeting was a waste of our time and that in looking for a polite way to leave and get back to my work, I actually emailed an assistant from the meeting after I had been there for 10 or so minutes and wrote, can you please call me on my cell? Need excuse to get out of meeting. And just days before the presidential election, Kushner said he received a random email from an account, Guccifer400, threatening to reveal candidate Trump's tax returns and demanding money in exchange for not publicizing the information. Quote, I brought the email to the attention of a U.S. Secret Service agent on the plane we were all traveling on and asked what he thought. He advised me to ignore it and not to reply, which is what I did. The sender never contacted me again.
All right, Catherine Herridge, always doing great reporting. Well, that was Jared Kushner. That's a short version of his testimony. We're going to talk about it more. Should he have testified? His attorney has pulled aside and not been standing by his side, Jamie Gorelick. I could do an hour on his attorney, who is connected with the Clintons and the Obamas in amazing ways, not even privately, but publicly. But we're going to talk about as much as we can and make it as clear as we possibly can, if that is even possible. Professor William Jacobson joins me next from Cornell University. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative. 1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrates' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrates. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrates' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrates' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Has anyone else noticed the utter breakdown of common civility, common sense, and common courtesy? Indeed, they are anything but common. They are so scarce one might think they have all but become extinct. For now, let's focus on the office of the President of the United States. Historically speaking, whether one liked or agreed with the President, they generally showed respect to the office. So what can one do? Number one, we are called to pray for our leaders. It's been said that we should pray as though it is all up to God, but work like it's all up to us. With that in mind, number two, let us get involved by standing for the truth and helping others to see the truth according to Scripture. And number three, let us dedicate our lives to bringing glory to God in the church, in our government, in society, and throughout the world. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
From Wichita, Kansas, comes word of a makeup artist who was disqualified from a national contest because she backs the president. Gypsy Freeman was named the winner of the Saint Plus Center contest, sponsored by Kat Von D Beauty. Her $2,500 prize package included a trip to Los Angeles. But someone did some digging and discovered Freeman's pro-Trump postings on social media. Kat Von D fired off a message to Freeman, telling her they could not extend an invite to a Trump supporter. They went on to wail about the president being anti-feminist and anti-gay and anti-immigrant, anti-climate, and the usual stuff. You know, the next time Kat Von D Beauty decides to hold a contest, they could let the contestants know that pro-Trumpers are not welcome. As they say, beauty is only skin deep. And apparently, so is tolerance. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You heard at the top of the story, there's a new tweet this morning by the president bashing Attorney General Sessions again. Attorney General Sessions has taken a very weak position on Hillary Clinton crimes. Where are emails and DNC server and intel leakers? That's what the president is saying. Of course, I just read you the quote by General Sessions yesterday when he said that he's working as hard as he can. He still doesn't have any U.S. attorneys, and he doesn't have any of his aides confirmed by the Senate. And so I find myself wondering, you know, I do wish General Sessions had not recused himself. That didn't make sense to me, but should he have or should he not have? Giuliani, who is now put aside as just a rumor, Giuliani has been discussed as a replacement for Sessions, but Giuliani defended Sessions and said, I would have recused myself as well under the rules of the Justice Department. So I find myself with lots of legal questions this morning, and I can't answer them, but I know the person that can. His name is Professor William Jacobson. He has joined us before. You will remember that he's a professor of law at Cornell University, graduate of Harvard. He is also the editor of Legal Insurrection, which is a blog, kind of a little bit of a rebellion against the current culture in the legal profession. Professor Jacobson, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Let me describe legal insurrection to our audience. Would that be something they would want to read, or is it just for people that are in the legal profession?
No, and I hope they do want to read it. It's probably more politics than law. We are not a legal website in the sense of technical sorts of law issues. It's more how law intersects with politics. So really, since it comes up every day, is something legal? Is it not legal? What's the law on this? So it's really a political website that deals with legal issues as they affect politics and vice versa.
All right. Well, this legal web we find ourselves in, it's all interconnected. So I think the best way for us to discuss it is do it by personalities, because we have Senator Sessions, who recused himself, and then Rob Rosenstein, who then is the acting director on the Russia scandal, and he appoints Bob Mueller, and then Bob Mueller's appointed, you know, as the special counsel, and then the thing is just going crazy. So all the news stories I've talked about prior to you joining me are sort of connected to that. Let's talk about Robert Mueller and his investigation as special counsel. You initially thought he was a good pick, didn't you?
I did. I thought it would seem that he would be fairly neutral. I do say I was cautious about it, and I said we need to see where it goes. But what really has troubled me and has turned me somewhat against his appointment is the way he has put his team together. First of all, it's just an enormous team. I think I pointed out in one post on my website that they now have as many attorneys on that team as the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Rhode Island. Rhode Island is my home state. So it's an enormous office. This is the equivalent of what federal prosecutors need for an entire state, and it's all focused on this. So just the size of it seems to be building a semi-permanent, massive bureaucracy of people whose job it is not necessarily to investigate, but to actually go after the president and his associates. So that troubled me. Then you do have this issue that a lot of, I don't know if it's all of them, but certainly many of the prosecutors who have joined the team have histories of exceedingly aggressive prosecutions that have been overturned eventually by the courts. I think one of them was the Enron prosecutor or the Arthur Anderson prosecutor and things like that. And third, you have people who are overwhelmingly Democrat donors and obvious sympathizers. Now, if Mueller was really concerned about protecting not just the actual integrity of his team, but the perception of integrity, and as we know, that's very important. If he is supposed to be independent, you would think that he would have a more independent, politically independent sort of group there. So these things all together have been extremely troubling to me. And then you add on top of it the fact that the leaks do not appear to have stopped. Now, whether they're actual leaks or the newspapers have invented them, I don't know. But we've had a series of claims in the media based on anonymous sources close to the team who are talking about what they're investigating, who they're investigating, et cetera. So you put it all together, and it's not a good situation in my estimation.
No, and you think about the close relationship between Jim Comey and Bob Mueller. That in itself should have been a disqualifier, I think. But do you think people just weren't aware of that?
Well, you raise a good point. At the get-go, there's a question of whether Mueller was a good appointment, because soon after he was appointed, after James Comey was fired as FBI director, once Comey was fired as FBI director, it then became apparent, I should say, that Comey's conversations with the president could be subject to the special counsel investigation. The problem there is that Comey and Mueller are good friends, both professionally and reportedly personal friends. So how can you have the supposedly independent special counsel investigating events where his close friend is one of the key witnesses? And once that came out, I think that should have been grounds for Mueller to recuse himself or to be removed. The special counsel, it's not a law, it's actually a regulation. The special counsel regulation lists as one of the grounds for removal of the special counsel is conflict of interest. And I think it is a clear conflict of interest. If the special counsel is investigating the interactions between James Comey and Donald Trump, I don't see how Robert Mueller can be the special counsel, because that's a conflict of interest based on the personal relationship that they have. So that is, you know, I wish I had mentioned that the first time you asked the question. That is a very significant development that really it got raised in the press and then dropped, and they've moved on to other things.
Yeah, so when it was raised in the press and we were talking about this, I have a little bit of knowledge about Bob Mueller because my husband is former FBI. So I knew a lot. I knew something about how he operated, and I personally never thought that he was a good choice for a lot of reasons. All right, so it's come out in the press that they have this close relationship and everybody's sort of gobsmacked, I guess I could say. That was a pretty big story. And then, but the next step, it seems to me that someone should have asked him to recuse himself. Someone should have done something. Who should have done something? Instead of just having it reported, I agree with you. That the iron we needed to strike then. Why didn't someone do something, and who might have done something?
Well, I think, Rod Rosenstein is the person who would have done it, because he's the one who appointed him. He's, for that purpose, he's the equivalent of the acting attorney general on Russia-related matters and investigation-related matters. And he should have, you know, investigated that and run with the issue and raised the issue. So he's the person who should have done it. And I think that, you know, there's a question, why wasn't that done? Once it became apparent that, you know, the conversations between Comey and Trump were part of the investigation, then I think something needed to be done. And apparently, at least based on what we know publicly, absolutely nothing was done, and that's been very troubling. And I just think the whole way the special prosecutor came about, if you read the regulations, in order for there to be a appointment, there has to be a finding by whoever's doing the appointment, normally the attorney general, but in this case, Rod Rosenstein, that there were a criminal investigation was warranted. And I'm not sure that that finding has ever been made, at least publicly, because this was always, as described by Comey through the time he testified in Congress, and I think it was late May or June, was a counterintelligence investigation. So why was a special counsel appointed at all? The whole way this thing has gone down has been really suspect. But the media, because they want the special counsel not only to harass the Trump administration, but to actually indict people or try to indict people, the media is acting like the special counsel is sacrosanct, that there is nothing you can do, that if anything were to be done to the special counsel, it's a constitutional crisis, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that, you know, the media is very happy. The Democrats are very happy. Republicans who hate Trump are very happy. Because what you have is a situation that's not supposed to take place in this country, where they haven't identified a crime to be investigated. They haven't even said there's a crime to be investigated, yet they appoint this team, which is growing in size, to do nothing but investigate people to try to find a crime. And that's not how we're supposed to work here. Here, the police, the prosecutors investigate and prosecute crimes. They don't find the person and then try to find the crime. I mean, there's a very famous saying by the head of the secret police during Stalin in the Soviet Union, find me the man and I'll find you the crime. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, if any of our lives were to be subjected to a team of 20 prosecutors plus FBI plus investigators scouring over every aspect of our life, you probably could find some laws broken. And there's a very famous book written by a civil liberties lawyer in Boston area called Three Crimes a Day, which is with thousands and thousands and thousands of federal crimes on the books. We all probably violate some of those every day just by leading our lives. And so it's just a really bad situation. It's politically motivated. has morphed into, and I do believe he's right about this, a witch hunt where you have this enormous team of people trying to find a crime. And that's not what it was supposed to be when it started. When it started, it was supposed to be, let's investigate whether there was collusion between the campaign and the Russians. And now it's morphed into something much, much more.
You know, let me quote from you in your article about Mueller. The article you wrote, now this would be the end of June, Mueller legal team approaching size of entire U.S. Attorney's Office for Rhode Island. Excellent article, but you end it with something is not right here. They're not investigating a crime. They are organizing a search party to find a crime. And I think that's well said. And I want to read something to you that kind of proves your point. We know that the media hates Trump. We know that the left hates Trump, but this comes from a different source who you mentioned in general. And this is former White House ethics lawyer Richard Painter under George W. Bush. And he now serves as vice chair of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. And he said, if Trump fires Mueller, it should be bye-bye Trump or bye-bye Congress. And he goes on to talk about everybody's warning him. I have heard lots of people warning President Trump that he better not dare fire Robert Mueller. It would be a disaster. And I say to myself, Professor Jacobs, look, everyone hates him already. What more could they say? Are they going to go after his family? Oh, gee, no, they've already done that. What more could they do if he decided to start the wheels turning to get rid of this whole office and dismantle it?
Well, first, let me say Richard Painter should not be taken seriously, and I've written this. The organization he's vice chair of, is a pro-Democrat, left-wing organization. The person, he's vice chair of that group. The person who was vice chair before him, who he replaced, was David Brock, who's the opposition researcher for Democrats.
Oh, my
Nobody
goodness.
Ever points that out. Nobody knows that. Richard Painter has been screaming treason for 6 months. Richard Painter, in my estimation, should not be taken seriously. But because he was a former Bush administration ethics person, that's what people always lead in with to give him credibility. So I don't think anybody needs to ascribe an authority level to what Richard Painter says.
All right, well, that's interesting.
I did not know that.
That's great background. Well, we should put that on our Facebook page, Professor Jacobson, so people can know that. Maybe you can share that with us later. Okay, so what else?
Sure, and so what else can they do? I guess that what they can do is they can impeach him. And the howling would be, you can see it already, many Republicans are saying, you know, don't fire him, or suggesting that. And it's a no-win situation for the administration, because if they let this thing go on the trajectory it is now, it is going to be water torture of them for years. It's going to be essentially freeze the administration's ability to get anything done. If they terminate it, there will be enormous pressure, and they may, who knows, they may even get the votes in Congress to impeach. They don't need 100% of Republicans. Every single Democrat, of course, would vote. So they only need to pick off 40 or 30, whatever the number is in the House, Republicans out of 200 plus. So they only need to pick off 10 or 15% of the Republicans, and they have enough for impeachment. So I don't know the way out of this for Trump, but it's just a really bad situation, and it all emanates from the appointment of the special counsel, despite there not being a finding under the regulations that there was, in fact, a crime to be investigated.
Wow, and that might explain, in large part, the anger against General Jeff Sessions, who I consider a very fine man. It distresses me, but you can see the buildup of anger against him because it's a result of his actions that this has all developed. And let's talk about that when we come back. Professor William Jacobson of Cornell University, he's the clinical professor of law there, publisher of LegalInsurrection.com, which is a great website for great information. It takes a lot of courage to go counter to the legal culture right now, and Professor Jacobson certainly has that. We'll continue the discussion when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
See to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. A proposal to ban the Pentagon from paying for transgender sex reassignment surgeries and transition treatment was shot down in the House of Representatives by Republicans. 24 Republicans joined a unanimous Democrat caucus to defeat the measure in a close 209 to 214 vote. One thing that has become abundantly clear with this current political cycle is that the swamp includes Democrats and Republicans. What used to be D's versus R's has become constitutionalist patriots versus regressive globalists, regardless of party affiliation.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
God has uniquely gifted you for his purposes. You are wired for good works. Volunteering with Operation Christmas Child directly connects you with God's global purposes. By serving year-round, you further the proclamation of the gospel in more than 150 countries through a simple gift-filled shoebox. To learn more about local, year-round opportunities to make disciples or to apply, visit SamaritansPurse.org/volunteer with OCC.
The American Family Association invites you to help us make In God We Trust more than a slogan. Since 1977, the American Family Association has been a voice to remind America that the blessings of our nation have come from God's gracious hand. You can order In God We Trust wristbands to share at afastore.net. That's afastore.net. Why not get 40 wristbands in honor of the American Family Association's 40th anniversary?
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Arguably, Donald Trump is president today because of a popular television reality show in which he regularly fired people who did not measure up. Now, he needs actually to do that to a number of unworthy subordinates. Top of the list for such action are holdovers from the Obama administration who have inexplicably been allowed to run its successor. Never mind that candidate Trump explicitly pledged to repudiate the Obama legacy, something its authors cannot be relied upon to do. Then there's the regrettable choice of his national security advisor, Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. Literally, from day one, McMaster has insubordinately defied his boss on everything from naming our jihadist enemies to committing ground forces in Syria to certifying Iranian compliance with the fraudulent Obama bomb deal. It's past time for Donald Trump to tell McMaster, "You're fired." This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, these are turbulent times. The president has been in office for 6 months now, so lots of things are changing. We talked yesterday about Anthony Scaramucci being the new communications director. Sarah Huckabee Sanders moving into the role that Sean Spicer had. This morning, there's a report that Rex Tillerson is reportedly debating resigning as Secretary of State. Part of it says that he's upset about the president's discussion publicly and criticism of Jeff Sessions, Attorney General Sessions. But I also know that Tillerson has sort of defied the president on issues like Iran, the Iran deal, and also in the handling of the issue of Qatar in the Middle East. And we can go into that in more detail, but the problem is that Tillerson, I love his command. I have to say, his presence and his command. but he is not on the same page in policy with the president. So you're going to see a lot of turmoil. We just have to pray that it comes down in the right way. And right now, let's talk about the turmoil in regard to Attorney General Sessions, who, of course, was a senator in Alabama, winsome and powerful in his own way. I used to say he was Ted Cruz before Ted Cruz because of his fight against the out-of-control immigration system, whether it was illegal or just the out-of-control bringing into a million people a year that illegally, and the issuance of HB1 visas to cut Americans, natural-born Americans, out of the workforce and technology, and on it goes. He's been a champion on that, and I think since he's been a nominated attorney general and since he recused himself, he has turned his attentions to that issue, and he has single-handedly, you heard him describe, he has no U.S. attorneys and he has hardly any staff. So he's, you know, waging a one-man war, it seems, to do what he can do to turn back the tide, at least on the issue that he knows so well, which is immigration. But it's certainly true that when he recused himself, it sent things in a mess, and we have a mess that's much greater than what I described. Professor William Jacobson is my guest. He's a clinical professor of law at Cornell Law School, publisher of Legal Insurrection. Professor Jacobson, I'm hearing mixed things about the recusal. Giuliani agreed with Sessions and said, I would have recused myself as well. What did he have to recuse himself? Was that a wise move? Was that the thing to do if you're a man of integrity? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I'm not sure he was required to do it, that there's any law that required him to. There is a regulation that talks about government attorneys not being involved in matters where they have a personal friendship with the people being investigated, which, of course, is the point I'm making about Robert Mueller. But those talk about criminal investigation. And at the time Sessions recused himself, it was not clear there was a criminal investigation going on. In fact, based on James Comey's testimony, there wasn't. It was a counterintelligence investigation. So I'm not sure he needed to, at least at that time, but there is also the appearance. And so I think it's a close call. I don't think he was required to. On the other hand, I could see why he might feel there's an appearance of some sort of conflict based upon his support for the president during the campaign, based upon his own testimony before Congress, where Sessions might himself be part of the investigation or a subject of the investigation. So I think it was a tough call, which is why I think you're seeing the anger from Trump. I think it was a week or so ago, saying, had I known that he would have to recuse himself or would recuse himself, I never would have appointed him. And I think that they're probably, I think Jeff Sessions was a good pick. I agree with you. I think he's done a good job, although I don't agree with his civil forfeiture position. But by and large, I think he's somebody who really gets what the problem is. But what didn't happen is nobody, I think, expected the Russia mania to go on as long and as far as it did. I think Trump mistakenly believed, and the people around him believed, that once the election was over, yeah, there'd be a month or so of people screaming, but then it would calm down and we'd do like we do with every other presidency, which is, even if you don't like the person and you oppose their policies, you don't try to literally disrupt the transition of power. So I don't think they expected it to go the direction that it went. And so I don't think, and I don't remember the exact date when Sessions was nominated by Trump, but I think that it was something that nobody really thought through. Where is this thing going to go? And is Sessions going to be able to stay in the position, and what might that mean? I think when people look back upon the history of the Trump administration, I think Jeff Sessions refusing himself is going to be, at least as of this point in time, the single biggest influencer of how the administration went. Now, obviously, we've got time. Other things could happen. But as of now, that has probably been the single most significant event of the administration because it put into motion this seemingly endless, wide-ranging attempt to find a crime by the Mueller team. And that, I think, is the defining moment in the administration. So I understand Trump's frustration. that, and I understand that it all goes back to the fact that if he hadn't appointed Sessions, he had appointed somebody else, that he wouldn't be in this situation now with this special counsel who seems seemingly out of control special counsel.
Let me read something before, because I want to move on to what we can do, what can be done. But before I do that, Lloyd Marcus is a black conservative who wrote a really interesting article for the Daily Caller, and this is what he said. He says, Sessions stepping aside from the FBI Trump-Russia investigation was the equivalent of bringing an olive branch to a gunfight. Sessions did not win any goodwill from leftists for his unnecessary and unwise decision to step aside. Quite the opposite, leftists saw Sessions recusing himself as a sign of weakness, blood in the water. And then he says, remarkably, some Republicans still naively believe they will not be trashed by fake news media if they can prove they are fair-minded good guys who seek to work with Democrats. Meanwhile, Democrats and fake news media interpret Republicans extending olive branches as weakness to be exploited, an opportunity to plunge the dagger into Trump and Republicans' political hearts. I kind of agree with him. I don't know if you do. It just seems
the Democrats and some never Trump Republicans decided immediately upon Trump's election that they were going to do everything within their power to get him out of office or prevent him from taking office. A defining moment for me in the way I looked at this, because I didn't support Trump during the primaries. I supported Ted Cruz. But a defining way that I've looked at this is when Democrats, some never Trump Republicans, and parts of the legal community tried to disrupt the Electoral College. I've never heard of that happening, at least not in our lifetimes, where you literally try to prevent the transition of power because you don't like an election result. And when they tried to intimidate the electors, when they tried to lobby them, when they were emailing them and harassing them, to me that said, this is so far beyond what is the norm that they pose a significant threat to our republic, that somebody who would intimidate an elector to change his or her vote against the popular vote in that district, to me, is really a threat to our republic. Now, it didn't pan out. I don't think any electors changed their votes, but they tried. And that goes to the point that you were making, or the person was making in that clip, that the being nice to people who would try to prevent the peaceful transition of power, which is the Democrats and some never-Trump Republicans, is not going to work because they don't honor. I mean, as much as people opposed Obama and Obamacare and other things, I don't recall anybody trying to prevent the transition of power, trying to obstruct Obama's ability to staff his administration. Now, there were individuals who might have been opposed, but by and large, statistically, Obama, by this point, had far more people in place to run his administration. There are entire, sub-departments of major agencies that don't have a single person appointed by Trump. Now, part of that's Trump's fault. He hasn't nominated as large a number of people as in the past. But even if he had, they are not making their way through the pipeline. The Democrats in the Senate are stalling through procedural maneuvers. Almost everybody who is nominated by Trump, even people they end up voting for, they make the process, there are procedural rules on debate and things like that, where you can stretch out an individual's process for days or weeks. And you do that for every single one, and you get in a situation where there are numerous, I think there's still 14 or 15 judicial nominations who haven't even made it through the Senate Judiciary Committee, because each nomination takes so long, even if the person's eventually approved. And so what you have is you have had a full-scale attempt to prevent the peaceful transition of power, which is continuing to this day. And that's what makes this whole situation very different than anything I've ever seen, very different than the opposition to Obama. And it's really unprecedented, and I think a very worrisome development.
I do too, and I think Senator Sessions. Oh dearie me, we'll have to call him back. I think Senator Sessions has been part of that Senate culture where I've said repeatedly they just don't seem to understand. I think the American people understand that we are on the brink here of losing our country in many, many ways. And they are still busy, you know, doing the gentleman's exchange where they, the senator from the gentleman from such and such, and abiding by all of their rules when chaos lawlessness is breaking out about them, and also the willful destruction of the American institutions. And so it's a serious problem. I just find myself wondering, and I hope Professor Jacobson joins us again here. I just wonder if something can be done at this point. What can we do? What can we do to stop this investigation, which is out of control by Bob Mueller? If the president can't do it, can someone under him do it? Could General Sessions do something? Could he unrecuse himself? Could he take the bull by the horns? And could Senator McConnell actually sort of change the rules in the Senate so that nominations could go through and there could be U.S. attorneys and staff for the attorney general to actually get the work done? Those are the things that I would ask. Professor Jacobs, we only have a couple of minutes.
Yes, I'm here. I don't know what happened. The call dropped.
Let me give it to you because I'm talking about, we only have a couple of minutes. What in the world could happen that you could see could sort this thing out? What person, what place, what appointment?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think this is one of those situations where there is no way out for the Trump administration. There's no good way out, I should say. And I think that allowing the Mueller investigation to continue the way it's going is the easy choice. There's no question about it. Because whatever the repercussions are, they're months, maybe even years down the road, as opposed to the repercussion now of firing him or of firing Sessions, getting a new AG in place who says we no longer need a special counsel. So I don't know the way out. I wish I knew the way out. This all emanates, as I was indicating, from a desire of Democrats and some never-Trump Republicans to prevent the administration of Donald Trump from being able to operate, to staff itself, and to conduct the business of the country. And I think this is an unprecedented and very dangerous situation we're in, where we've gone beyond political objections, and we are now trying, 6 months after inauguration still, to prevent the president from fully taking power.
How much danger do you think the president and his family are in?
Well, I don't necessarily mean that they are in physical danger, but I think his administration is in danger of being paralyzed. And that is the goal of the Democrats. The goal of the Democrats and Republicans who hate Trump is to completely paralyze the administration, to put it in a position as if it never existed. And they're getting very close to that. They're getting very, very close to that.
But not yet. So we remain hopeful.
Not yet.
At least
not
I do
yet.
Today.
And I think if I had advice for Trump, it would be start getting things done. And Mitch McConnell, start pushing people through the system.
Yes.
Start getting some success.
Forget the silly rules. Change the rules and get these people in place so that we can fight back. That's my view of it. Professor William Jacobson, again, of Cornell Law School. Thank you so much, Professor Jacobson. It's great to have you this morning. I hope that we can do this again sometime soon.
Look forward to it.
All right. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.